Scout Trooper banter, more Baby Yoda, an amazing IG-11 episode. We're talking the Mandalorian finale that aired a week ago, but we're talking about today. Stay tuned.
I'm Maria Menounos, and you're tuned in to AfterBuzz TV, the ESPN of TV talk. Now, let the buzz begin.
What's going on, Mandalorian Star Wars fans? This is the Mandalorian After Show, where we talk all the Mando lore. I am your leader. I am not Steph Sabraw.
No,
I am Rylo Ren. This is Ryan Nilsson. Unfortunately, Steph cannot be here today, but I am not alone today with Grand Admiral Zia. We got Zia Anderson right over here.
I feel like I'm super excited to talk about this, but I also feel like I cannot compete with Christian's dancing. I try, and then I just have to stop because it's so amazing.
But you will compete with some incredible news alongside.
Some good news today.
Alongside our Grand Moff Christian Blatt with the Blatt
that
chat.
That is me, and I am in the Blatt chat looking for everybody talking Mando. So please give us your thoughts, your hopes, your dreams, your concerns.
And Happy New Year, y'all. It's 2020.
Oh my God.
We're talking Star Wars in 2020. We made it to the next decade.
Yeah.
And we're just so excited to be talking about the show. So again, as Christian said, comment your thoughts on this episode below. This is all spoilers. We're going deep dive on the Mandalorian finale, The Redemption, Season 1, Episode 8. Later, we're going to be talking about Trooper Banter, Baby Yoda, IG-11's incredible entrance into the battlefield, Mando's helmet comes off, and their relationship with droids, as well as all the Mando lore. And we're going to have a little director's corner focusing on Taika Waititi, who directed this finale today, as well as some news with Zia and all of our predictions for what comes next after this incredible, incredible show on Disney Plus. First off, overall thoughts, y'all. Mandalorian finale, what were your thoughts?
So good. This was just such a great way to end a really great season. They hit everything that I wanted to be hit. Basically, there was a fantastic action scene. There was so much character growth that there's those moments that really hit in this episode. They had what I really loved too is that they sort of left it on a cliffhanger setting up for season two.
Yeah.
And I'm so excited for season two. So we literally got everything. Such a fantastic job. Shout out to Taika Waititi.
Big shout out. Couldn't be more excited. Christian, thoughts?
Yeah, I'd love to sit here and try and take the air out of the room and pretend that I hated it for a second, but it was so good, I can't.
You literally
can't. It was so many of the things that we wanted, things that we hoped for, stuff we didn't even realize we were going to get, and just so many amazing sequences that I know we're going to talk about, but jam-packed with action and the aforementioned Manda lore. You know, they really went kind of deep into some of the backstory stuff, which I thought was great. And just getting to see so many of the characters that we've loved throughout the season that I thought, I can't imagine the season ending a little bit better, you know, any better than it did now.
It's such a good book note. And this month, December, really, has just been an incredible month for Star Wars because we had Episode 9 come out, obviously.
Oh, that came out?
That did come out.
Oh.
And, I mean, we were just so enthusiastic after this finale. We did do a little reaction, quick thoughts video that our own Bree8, Brianna Phipps, put together. Thank you so much, Bree. But we were all just so enthusiastic in the video. We didn't coordinate the thoughts. We just recorded 2 minutes, sent it in, and we all had some really similar feelings and just like, what is this Darksaber? We got to see his helmet. We know his name. Like, so much happened in this episode. It was so satisfying. And it really, I think, as just an overall thing, it made the entire season better. This really connected a lot of the other episodes where we thought it was an Adventure of the Week. And there were some Adventure of the Week episodes, which you could also call filler. But I don't think filler is necessarily a bad thing.
No.
This finale, though, did kind of connect all the dots that were sort of placed throughout the season.
You know what they did? Sorry, Christian.
Go ahead.
They did a great job with some of my favorite. It's similar to some of my favorite seasons of Doctor Who.
So that's what I was going to say.
It wasn't really?
Were you?
It was.
Because a good season of Doctor Who, they all seem like standalone episodes, but they'll always be like, oh, actually, this thing had to do with that.
Yep.
And that's what I was going to say.
It ties in together.
It tied in just the way a good season of that show would, because they usually look like standalone episodes. And a lot of these were, you know, you just sit down and watch the Bill Burr one, you know, and be like, oh, that was cool. But what I would say is I'm so jealous of anyone who waited until after the 27th and they're like, well, now I'm doing my free week of Disney Plus, and they watched them all. And I'm like, oh, that must have been such an amazing experience.
We can still do that. I think I might, before season two comes out,
I wanted to do that before today, but my kids are home from school, so there's no
after
time
we
for that.
After we break down the rest of the episode, let's talk about just the idea of, are you going to keep Disney Plus, and does this work as a binge, or is it better to week by week? We'll get into that a little later.
That's a great point.
But let's start off with just this trooper banter. You know, at the end of last week's episode, One of the biggest, most anxiety-induced cliffhangers I've seen in a show in a while, where you see Baby Yoda just get scooped off the ground. We don't know what his fate is. We don't know what's going to happen to him. I was sweaty. And you know, the episode premiered on a Wednesday, so it wasn't just a week. It was a week and a half where we had to see what happens. And I love how right up top they just address that. They didn't wait to answer all those unanswered questions. And we have this incredible back and forth, which was so Taika Waititi, with the two scout troopers stopping their speeders and just kind of waiting to be radioed in. And Jason Sudeikis,
yes,
and Adam Pally?
Yeah. Adam Pally, yeah.
Adam Pally, he punched Baby Yoda.
Yeah, like hard. A few times.
No, yeah. He used him like a little, like a speed bag.
Yeah.
And I was watching it too early in the morning. I did not yell at my TV, but I wanted to.
You were like, everybody's sleeping.
Yeah. It was like, I don't know when I put it on at like 12:05 or whenever it went, or 3:05. I don't even remember when it went live. I just was like, all right, I need to watch it now. And I was like, you don't touch Baby Yoda.
Don't put a finger on him.
You don't. I mean, you thought about killing him, but
yeah, Ryan's like on it, and it's cool. Yeah,
but you thought, look, cooler has prevailed. Let's be
cooler has prevailed.
You've gotten past that.
It was such a fascinating scene because on the one hand, it's mostly a funny scene.
Hilarious.
The banter back and forth, the shooting
where
of,
they can't hit anything, and you're like, oh, of course you can.
Incredible.
Why would you be able to hit it? Yeah.
But while as funny as it is, you're also building up this anger towards both the characters because of that hostility and aggression towards Baby Yoda, which I thought was really clever. Did you think it was too funny, or do you think it was just the right amount?
I think it was the right amount, and it's great to have that sort of downtime in canon because there's sort of like, I don't know, fan-made stuff. Like, there's a parody of Clerks called Troops, you know, the Kevin Smith film Clerks, and they're basically just like the two people who work at a convenience store and a video store in that movie. It's just like, look, Stormtroopers have a ton of downtime.
Right.
What are they going to talk about? Are they going to stand in formation the whole time? No, of course not. So I love that we actually got to see that. And you often, I mean, look, and these aren't even like Stormtroopers that are part of the Empire anymore.
Right.
These are Stormtroopers for hire. This is like, it's, we're
surprised.
They
don't have a lot of excitement.
Yeah, if it was casual Friday, one of them would have worn a hoodie, you know?
Right.
But it's, I thought it was great. And I don't know, I enjoy that level of humor that we've had because, look, Star Wars always has time for humor. Sometimes it lands, sometimes it doesn't. But they always make time for it, even going back to the first film. And I was glad that, you know, this series lent itself to this much time.
It definitely did. I thought it might have gone on for maybe 30 seconds too long.
Okay.
Although I thought it was really funny. I was just like, okay, what's going on? What's happening with Baby Yoda?
Yeah.
And then
like,
IG-11 comes in.
Yeah.
Right. And when IG-11 comes in, immediately, you had predicted it last week.
Yeah,
I did, because I think you were the one who said, like, oh, I didn't need to see them rebuilding him. And I'm like, well, they had to show it just to put it in our mind, because of course
he's
coming back. Despite the fact that Mando was like, don't, you know, just, I don't want him anywhere near the kid, basically.
Right.
But, you know.
And instantly disarming them and taking Baby Yoda.
Quick had spoken. And, yeah. But just to backtrack, what did you think about the comedy aspect of the two troops?
I loved it. It was just, it's okay. It was just so funny. It was one of those things that I think that, again, with this episode and previous episodes, they've done such a great job of balancing the comedy aspect with some of the more intense moments. And there were a lot in this episode.
And even the radioing in from what Moff Gideon's doing.
Yeah.
Because this is a character we've only seen one scene. It was the episode prior. He ended the episode. And they're just like, yeah, you just kill one of his men for talking over him, or just kill one of his men for interrupting him.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, gosh, because it's funny. But you're also like, wow, this guy means business.
The gravity. Yeah. And that's, again, why you get to, like, Christian, like you were saying, you get to sort of see that downtime and them actually talking back and forth. And, you know, I think, was it Jason Sudeikis, the one stormtrooper who goes, well, I don't know, I don't ask questions.
Yeah.
Like, they're just doing what they do because they get paid and they don't want to get killed by the higher-ups.
When you're in the military and you're part of the Empire, that's definitely what you do, but you have that mentality when it's for hire. It's like, look, I'm just getting paid,
right?
You know, and I think a lot of these bounty hunters, it's like, I don't ask questions.
I don't want to get killed,
and that's why the fact that Mando asks that question in, I guess, the second or third episode, what are you going to do with the child now? You know, it's like, you don't do that. That's not the code. You know,
definitely.
So nobody asks any questions in this universe. You know,
and it immediately started or articulated this tone that Taika Waititi is setting up for the entire episode. Obviously, he's a very stylistic director. He brings so much of his own comedy and qualities to anything he directs, especially with TV now. So I thought that was really fascinating for an opening scene. But IG-11 comes in. saves Baby Yoda and just takes out these troopers, hops on the speeder bike, puts them on his chest like he's in a baby grip, and then goes full blaze, full speed ahead. Really, really funny. And I was very curious to see what was going on, because I actually thought he was going to bring him back to the ship. But instead, no, protection mode, he's going to bring him to the Mandalorian. I think that was his programming saying, I can't just fly off with this thing.
That's what I thought, too. I thought he was going to go back to the ship and initiate the, what was it, defense?
The protocol.
Yeah, defense protocol. That's what I thought was going to happen. I was honestly so surprised when he went, to, like you said, towards the town, guns a-blazing. I was like, wow, I mean, I know you're protecting Baby Yoda, but you're also kind of putting him in harm's way a little bit by going into a town full of the Empire.
Christian, thoughts on the entrance?
Yeah, I think that that absolutely makes sense, but I think that his programming is sophisticated enough. And look, even though, is his name Queeg?
It's Quill?
Quill. Yeah. I was just like, wait, Queeg was wrong. Quill. See, this is why we always called him McNulty, because we spent so much time trying to figure out his name. But this is why, you know, Quill reprogramming him, it's still, he's going to be like a killing machine. Mm-hmm. It's just focused in a little bit of a different way.
Right.
So I think that's his instinct, and he realizes, if I hide out in this machine, everybody's coming after me.
Definitely.
So let's try and get some reinforcements. So, no, logically it made sense, but I was a little surprised that he wasn't going to try and regroup and just, you know, hunker down on the ship. Yeah.
And he goes full blaze in. It's classic Western, coming in on the horse, firing away, and a full-out battle. But and right before that, though, we go back into that little bunker that Mando and Cara Dune and everyone else is in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we finally get the full flashback of Mando and where and what happened to his family, how he got inducted into this creed. And they do confirm that, you know, Mandalorian, it isn't a religion. It isn't a race. It is a religion. It's not a race. It is more of a creed.
Yes.
And how...
And in that sense, I'd say it's similar to being a Jedi. You know,
definitely.
You're not any kind of race, any kind of specific upbringing. You're just sort of almost recruited, or you fall into
a foundling.
Yeah, and, right, exactly.
And it's a all slow motion sequence where we've seen bits and pieces throughout the season. But, you know, there was clearly a droid attack on the planet he was at, and his parents put him in this little shelter bunker, and as soon as they closed the doors, you hear the explosion. His parents were killed,
and then
the Mandalorians, almost immediately after, I don't know where they were 2 minutes before, but almost immediately after.
They just got there.
Let me pose a question to both of you and everyone in the chat.
Oh.
Who was disappointed that Boba Fett wasn't there?
I just thought, wait, maybe?
Because I did not want a present-day Boba Fett because he's supposed to be dead.
It's a fair question.
This is 5 years after Return of the Jedi, but we don't know how old he is. Mm. He certainly could have rescued a young Mando.
That was the exact thought that I had when they opened it, and I was like, oh, I was hoping it was going to be Boba Fett, and then it was not.
And then when it wasn't Boba Fett, and then I'm like, well, there's more.
There'll be somewhere.
So maybe one of them, and then I looked,
somewhere.
And I'm like, no.
Yeah, I do agree with you. I first second thought, oh, are they going to give us a little Boba Fett reference here, but
that would have been
nice. it was a whole clan.
So
and
you can't accuse this show of doing too much fan service.
No,
because
you cannot.
This fan feels given poor service.
I do think it would have distracted from the moment, though, because that moment really it was a full articulation of like, okay, this is why he hates droids, this is why he's uneasy around IG-11. His family was killed and he was a foundling, and there's some great shots that I'll reference later that are very, very similar to the shots we have with Baby Yoda, and in a way he's doing what the Mandalorians did for him for Baby Yoda.
Mm-hmm.
But we finally see all this, and he tells Cara Dune, and he tells everyone, and they're finally about to, it's the final battle, and Gideon's giving his speech on how he's going to let him stay till nightfall. I was a little surprised by that, but Gideon knew details about all three of them.
All of them.
And we found out Cara Dune is from Alderaan.
So cool!
I know, I thought that was pretty great.
That's some fan service. That's a perfect little tidbit of fan service.
It was a great detail that I was excited about.
What I find interesting about the Mandalorians, I like that we got that backstory, but it is very interesting that they're saying Mandalorians are not a race, they are a creed. But Mandalore is a planet,
right?
And so there are people who are born on that planet who are born Mandalorian.
Right,
so
it's
interesting.
It is interesting.
You kind of get
I think they're going to build on it throughout the next season.
I hope we get more.
I think we will get more. And let's just talk about Moff Gideon for a second here.
Yeah.
Because, again, he clearly knows a lot of details about this
about everybody,
entire group.
Yeah.
There's some questions of how he knows. I bet he has these Imperial databases, mm-hmm. and I think he has a very close relationship to Mandalore, as we'll talk at the end with that Darksaber. But man, I mean, what do you think? Do you think he has some history? Obviously, Mando knew who he was, and he was like, "That's Moff Gideon." Mm-hmm. Like he's dead. No, that's him. I think, what does this say about his character? How does everyone know about him? What had he done in the past? What do you think we're going to learn in the future?
Well, I think that just goes to show that he has been around for a very long time, clearly. I also think that there might be some personal history between him and Din Djarin.
Din Djarin.
Mando. I started referring to him now as Din. In this episode, I was like, yeah, it's Din.
I still like calling him Mando, though. Yeah. And there was someone in the chat who asked. We can still call him Mando.
Of course,
but if you prefer to call him Din Djarin, we're not gonna deduct anything. Seeing Moff Gideon and the fact that he knew that, I thought it was a great reveal that, like, oh, he knows my name. Nobody knows my name. You know what I mean? And I think that it raised so many questions, which even the way that the episode ended, it didn't really answer them. It just raised more questions.
Right.
So it's great to have somebody of the caliber of Giancarlo Esposito and know that he'll be back next season. And, just very intrigued to see where that goes. But, I think that he clearly, was part of the Empire, but I don't know what he's done in the 5 years since, but he seems to have maintained a lot of knowledge and vast, personal databases and things.
Well, in my notes, I saw they mentioned he is an ISB officer, mm-hmm. which that in and of itself is a form of a secret police, I think, for the Empire, Moff Gideon was. So I think that, with that being his backstory, and you're just comparing it to our own history, him being in the secret police, that means this is his job. He's supposed to know a lot about different planets. He's supposed to know a lot about these different cultures. He's similar to even Grand Admiral Thrawn in that regard. So I think that's it. Just shows how intellectually advanced he is. He's such a smart individual, and he knows so much about all these different cultures and why he might have this Darksaber. But and he's not afraid to get his hands dirty because they start that fight. And they go out guns blazing. IG-11 comes in, and he is out there himself with a pistol shooting at Mando. How dope was it, though? This entire fight. Like, they open the door, and he immediately is, like, taking troopers out. Thoughts on the battle?
Oh, I loved it. I've said this from the beginning of this show. They've done such a great job with the choreography and the fight scenes, and this was honestly no different. And I love seeing Giancarlo Esposito come in. He's got such a commanding presence that having him there in the middle of the battlefield, it feels like the stakes are just a little bit higher because he's there. Not only that, their E-Web cannon. I was waiting for that to get used.
God, that
could not
great.
Wait.
They set it up, and I'm like, I can't wait to see that thing in motion. And yeah, I think, look, you've seen in Star Wars, there are different levels of superiors. You've seen Darth Vader certainly will get his hands dirty, and he doesn't even have to touch you to do it. But and then you'll have your lieutenants and your generals who basically hide and let other people do it. But I almost called him Gus Fring. I liked seeing Moff Gideon just like, this is very important to him, which raises some more questions about like what he knows about the child and why he wants it. But he's like,
maybe he wants to eat it.
Could be delicious.
Probably not.
Probably not. Yeah.
I'm going to guess not.
Definitely not. No, just this
by the way, how disappointing would that be?
If he just wanted to eat them.
If he wanted to open a chain of fried Yoda restaurants.
Yeah, yeah.
So anyway.
Sorry.
No, it's fine. I think that it was good to see him like kind of in the thick of it instead of like, all right, yeah, take care of this, because that that always seems to be the undoing of your adversary, in pretty much every James Bond movie. I'm going to tell you what I'm going to do and then I'm going to leave.
And it's a great villain, and the way they establish fear with just small, quote-unquote, small for this universe, mm-hmm. weapons. Like, there's just, hey, we have this cannon. And then Cara Dune's like, oh, my God, that cannon, like, murdered all these people I know. And
like,
it's a small cannon as opposed to...
Disintegrated.
Sorry, I'm just comparing it to maybe some of the movies that might require, like, we have a whole fleet of this, and destroy planets. Like, I was almost more afraid of the small cannon in this scene than I was of that in, like, some of the other movies, just because of how they established the fear, how they establish the scenario. And it's just interesting. You can do a lot with a little sometimes.
Yeah.
Moving on to the helmet comes off.
Yeah.
So obviously the fight happens.
You guys are right.
He gets shot in the back of the head by Gideon.
Yeah. Ugh.
They go back into the shelter and they're like, let's just go down into the vents. Let's go where the Mandalorians are underground.
Because now IG-11 can actually open the grate. They couldn't before. So yeah. he only saved the day by coming in there to, you know, start the battle and let them retreat inside, but he saves the day by allowing them to get passage.
Yeah, he also allows for the escape plan to happen.
He's a
droid Swiss Army knife, really.
Seriously.
And that's what droids are usually used for in this universe. Yeah. But they're all going, and obviously Mando's injured, and he's injured in the back of his neck, yeah. I think, or his head, and yeah. he's ready to die. He's handing off Baby Yoda.
Yeah,
Cara Dune's like, I'm not leaving you. Yeah, and he's like
you have to go.
Yeah.
Yoda. You're like,
it's a classic action sacrifice, and I felt it too. I felt, wow. Well, they're going to the Mandalorian bunker. Like maybe next season's going to follow Mandalorian.
I did think that there was a chance that you know we were going to have a different Mandalorian for season two. You know, yeah. And I was just like, that's such a bold decision.
Totally,
because we're so invested in Din Djarin at this point. Yeah. But you know. I don't know. The show would have still been great, but I was relieved. I did think it was interesting that Kara says, I need to take your helmet off. He's like, nope, I need to die instead.
Right.
And then we finally get the moment, though, which I think is what we're all going to be talking
moment
about.
The moment where IG-11 goes and he's like, don't touch me. Puts the gun in his face. Don't you even touch me. No living thing can see my face. He's like, I am not a living thing.
And then he's like, all right. Fine. Yeah, it's fine.
Takes the helmet off and it's Pablo?
Yeah. I'm going to admit.
Pablo!
A little bit like Corey Feldman to me. I was a little surprised.
Pedro,
is it
sorry.
Because the hair was slicked back with sweat? Is that what did it? Yeah.
And Pedro Pascal, I mean, not looking great, but that was realistic.
Yeah, he was not red carpet ready.
A lesser performer might have requested to be more made up, but I mean, that's probably how you would look if you had a helmet on.
Of course.
24 hours a day.
He had major helmet hair, is what that was.
Helmet hair.
hair.
He's got a helmet hair for, I don't know, let's just say 25 to 30 years.
Yeah.
You know? So yeah, he's had it for a while.
But we see him without the helmet on. And I get the name.
I was relieved that they at least did it, and they did it in a way that didn't betray the story in any way. You know, he didn't then just put it back on and be like, shh, no, don't tell anybody. You know, he did it in front of a droid. It was fine. I thought that we might see it just he was going to be alone and they would just show it to us. But I thought that this worked so much better than that because of such an important part of the story. It's like, look, you're going to die. You take off the helmet, this droid's going to save your life. And I did like that he had back the spray, which back the tank from Hoth in Empire Strikes Back. That's what revived Luke Skywalker. So I was like when you get little consistencies.
Little tidbits for the medicine. Yeah. And it means not only that for IG-11 saving him, but it's also like he was willing to allow a droid to save him.
Yeah.
And droids are what he's afraid of most. So it meant so much for both characters that he's finally kind of letting that guard down, not only taking the helmet off, but for a droid, and how that might have even been a little bit more uncomfortable than the other way. So just an amazing scene, such a payoff, such a great buildup. And we get his name, Din Djarin.
Yeah, we get his name. We get to see his face. I love how when that question was posed, both Steph and I very matter-of-factly were like, no, we're not going to get to see his face. I really didn't think we were going to get to see his face. I liked the way they did it. It was very, what's the word I'm looking for?
Respectful.
Like, no, I knew it was going to happen. Like when he said, no living thing has seen me without the helmet.
You know what's
happening. I said the exact line right before IG-11 said, I said, I am no living thing. It was very, you knew it was coming, but it was still great. Like, they did it in a way that I also was with Christian. I thought they were going to do it when he was alone. But they managed to do it in a way that while it was still carried weight. So they did a great job with that moment.
It matters.
Yes. Yeah. And I'm still glad that we got to see his face.
And he recovered pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Because at one point they're like, carry me out. And then I think he turns a corner and he's like, you know, I'm good. And he just is now leading the walk.
Yeah.
He's leading everyone
away.
He recovers faster than Frank Castle, the Punisher.
Much faster.
Yeah.
Transitioning now to all this Mando lore. They're now in the Mandalorian tunnels and you just see that pile
of helmets.
Of helmets and armor.
Yeah.
What happened? And he's immediately like to Greef Karga, did you know about this? Did you do this? Like what happened here? Like, what didn't you tell me? And very matter of factly, he goes, after your the incident you caused with Baby Yoda, and this is the way a lot of people they fled. A lot of people were killed, and we don't really know what's going on with all the Mandalorians now. It's led to believe a lot of them are dead.
Yeah,
what do you think?
Hopefully escaped.
Well, they called attention to themselves, which is the whole reason that they don't do things like that, and it just shows that there's a little bit more of a network that was the Empire that is around, you know, responding to that. You know, I mean, there's a lot more around 5 years after Return of the Jedi than I think we were led to believe when the show started, because they had a very swift response and they were like, well, we're going to take out all these Mandalorians so that doesn't happen again. And I would say that Moff Gideon probably, whether he was down in those tunnels himself or not, I think he made sure that that happened.
Yeah. I mean, well, that's what the – are we calling her the Armorer? That's what in my head –
The Armorer, yeah. I think it's Armorer.
Armorer.
The Armorer.
The Armorer.
No, but not Armorall. That's not, a big difference.
Armorer.
Yeah, Armorer.
The Armorer.
The Armorer.
Gold Helmet. Yes. What did
– Gold Helmet's good.
Does confirm that, you know, the Empire did come and basically sort of wipe everybody out.
Right.
When he asks if they escaped or if anyone escaped, she says, I hope so. So she really doesn't know. It sounded like it was probably a really intense battle. And probably a lot of people died and hopefully some people got away. It's really interesting that she somehow managed to escape, survive, and stay there.
Absolutely. This is one of my favorite scenes of the episode and the season as a whole. I think let's just talk about the concept of lore for a second. You know, in any big pop culture kind of series, whether it's like a comic book franchise, sci-fi, the idea of lore is it can be the saving grace to a show and make someone really dive in, or it can just be kind of fodder, boring details. And I really think they did a fantastic job of establishing some lore with the Mandalorian culture. And they've had a little bit in the other TV shows, which again, we'll talk about a little later, but everything she said was so fascinating and really, really connects to Din Djarin and saying, you know, during this great purge, Moff Gideon was there. Like, Moff Gideon was one of the officers. And they mentioned the Great Purge in the first episode.
Yeah.
So we know something's happened. And now this is the second wave. Like, they're not just stuck on the aftermath of the Great Purge. There is continuation. And it's really only getting worse for that creed. I thought it was so fascinating how the Armorer, when she was mentioning Baby Yoda, and saying, you know, it's now your job. You two are binded. You're, in a way, it's father, and you need to find out where it's from. But what was interesting with that line was she didn't necessarily say a planet. She was just maybe even referring to a people.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe not even necessarily a race. It could just be a Jedi Order.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. I think that is very fascinating. And that obviously is teeing up stuff for the later seasons. But just talking about this lore and this foundling parallel, because now they refer to Baby Yoda as a foundling in and of itself for the Mandalorian culture. What did you think of this? How do you think they did with the lore?
Oh, they did a great job. Like you were saying, lore, it can be world building and it can be very interesting and it really helps you sort of get into what's happening. What I really liked about this too is the fact that she, you know, mentioned that he had to take this thing, as he puts it. I love that he says this thing, and try to find where it's from.
This is the way.
This is the way.
Yeah.
And what I liked about that too is the fact that, I mean, Baby Yoda the child, he can't raise this baby because of the way that they age differently. I have a feeling that Mando would get old and die before Baby Yoda's old enough to even take care of himself. So he does need to find his people. I mean, it's possible that he would age up to, like, what, a kid? I don't know.
Well, yeah.
He's 50 and he's still a baby.
Just keep in mind that when we first meet Yoda in Empire Strikes Back, he's 800
years old.
So I don't know exactly about Mando's people, but I'm going to bet that he's not going to live more than 100, maybe 150.
Probably not.
Just for the sake of the child being able to learn and actually take care of itself one day, he's going to have to find its people.
And he gets a signet.
He does.
Drawn on his shoulder pad, which he got at the beginning of the season.
Yes.
Yeah.
And, which I think is so interesting. And he's a clan of two. Wow. What are your thoughts, Christian?
I need to know, do you think we're going to see him get any armor next season? Little
new
baby
armor?
Baby Yoda armor.
I hope so.
And maybe not even like the helmet, but like maybe a little jetpack. I was just thinking, like, you know, you start small. You know, you start building up your armor. So like maybe he gets like a little wrist gun or something. He can shoot the flame. I was just hoping he gets something. But I thought it was really touching. And,
I love it.
I'm always a sucker for parallels of fathers and sons. Zia knows this from various shows we've done together. And just the idea, I'm like, oh my God, of course he is, you know, yeah. And he has to. And that's the thing. He always took this responsibility so seriously from, you know, yes, he did leave the.
Jeff, oh my gosh.
Oh my God.
That's an amazing picture that image. For those watching on YouTube.
Oh my goodness. Jeff
got. I need it. I
Baby Yoda's
that.
Got a strap and a helmet. Yeah.
And I just, you know, he always felt a responsibility. He knew it was wrong to bring the child and leave it. I mean, yes, he did leave it and go back to his ship. But he even in that moment, he knew it was
There's
wrong.
There's a connection.
There's always been a connection. And I think that the child definitely feels that. And, you know, that's why he protected him when they were just arm wrestling in Edmund's at episode 7 or 6.
Well,
you know, so he's so attached to him as well.
They care about each other.
Yeah, I agree.
It shows a lot, too, in that moment where when they get to the end, skipping ahead just up for a second, mm-hmm. when Cara Dune puts him down and Baby Yoda immediately walks up
puts
to him.
On the ground.
Yeah,
puts him on the ground.
Puts him on the ground.
Doesn't put him down. Yeah.
Right, puts him on the
no
ground.
No execution. Happened.
Walks right over to Mando. And right. puts his arms up like, hello.
They are a bond. They're the clan of two.
So sweet.
And I think it might even speak more to not just their relationship, but the relationship with the Jedi
mm-hmm.
and the Mandalorians in general, which, again, this armorer did reference with more of this lore in that there was the Mandalorian the Great versus the Jedi. And
so
how
interesting.
They used to, they interacted with each other. She was familiar with beings that could move objects.
Well, they had a battle. Like they were fighting each other
thousands of years ago,
which is so interesting.
And they do talk about that in the Clone Wars and Rebels. And there's a bunch of lineage which we can talk about. But just a few details on that because I have watched the Clone Wars and mm-hmm. Rebels. Thousands of years ago, there was a Mandalorian named Tar Vizsla, and he was the first Mandalorian that was Force sensitive, and he made a lightsaber. Was in this big battle and eventually passed on, and the Jedi took back his lightsaber. And a few thousand years later, where there's this big Sith Jedi battle, that's when the Mandalorians reclaimed it, and that is that darksaber we see at the end of this episode. So it's really interesting, great lore, and perhaps, you know, we get a video game or we get another Disney Plus series where we even go deeper into that. But before we even get into that darksaber, let's just talk about the ending here where they're leaving. They get into a lava stream.
Lava boat. Yeah.
Which,
and a boat.
Yeah.
And a
yeah. with an R2 droid piloting it, which I thought was cool. But he was like a biped R2 droid.
And
I'm like, we've never seen that
so
before.
Cool.
And I'm like, great. It's good to know they make them. If
R2-D2
saw that, he'd be like, wait, I could have those? Like, what am I wheeling around for
it's like the River
years?
Of Styx in a way.
Yeah, no, I definitely thought that. It was definitely a parallel to that because they were basically riding to their doom.
Yes.
Of course, that's when IG-11
oh my gosh.
Realizes what he has to do. And that sort of goes back to what you were saying, that he even says to Din Djarin that, no, I know you're sad. I can tell from the way you're talking that you're sad about this. Don't be sad for me. And he's like, I don't like droids. I'm like, yeah, but you kind of got to love this face.
He's begging him not to leave. Yeah. And you get this, it's built up so well. This has been such a great crescendo of drama where now we're so invested in everyone. He just got a signet. He has to protect Baby Yoda. He has to bring him to wherever he belongs. And they have to get out of this stream. At the end of the tunnel, he uses his infrared.
Yeah.
And he sees there are just a ton of troopers waiting for them. IG-11 does the math. He tells him the odds.
Yep.
And he says,
no chance.
I cannot live. I cannot live and also Baby Yoda live. My job is to protect this child.
Yeah.
And I have to die. I have to go sacrifice myself. Which the first episode where he tries self-destructing himself 3 or 4 times.
Yes.
Finally get this payoff. Terminator 2 style.
Yes.
Going into the lava. And I said this in our reaction. I half expected him to give a thumbs up as he walked out there. As Arnold Schwarzenegger did in T2. Wow, what an incredible scene. Walking into the lava and just self-destruct. Boom. And what a sacrifice. What did it mean to
I
you?
Loved the semantics where it's like, well, my programming to protect the child supersedes my programming that I have to destroy myself.
Mm.
So he had to be convinced by Mando that he was going to take care of him.
Right.
And then he did. So I just thought that was an interesting moment to take. It's like, he's not just going to ride off into the sunset. He has to know that the child's going to be okay. And that just made it that much more heroic. And
Mando cared. Mando cared more than anyone. He was doing it.
He really cared.
That's that crazy character development that you get, that you start out from. He's had this programmed in him since he was a child that he hates droids, and for good reason.
Yeah.
They literally killed his parents and destroyed his home. And so that's understandable that you sort of build that bias, which now the way that Quill did that whole thing and talked about how, you know, it's droids aren't inherently evil. It's the way that they're programmed and the way that they're exactly by who they're programmed by. You know, that really came back into place in such a big way. But it was just, I mean, he literally said, we need you. He, he was sad that he was leaving. He's, I mean, IG-11 saved his life. He is literally the reason that he was alive. And it was so interesting to see him go from hating droids and wanting nothing to do with them to not wanting to lose one that he's close to.
You're absolutely right.
It was incredible.
It's a great sacrifice.
Yeah.
And I also think to the character development of IG-11, compare him in the first episode to this episode. The first episode, he's basically there for comic relief. He keeps trying to blow himself up. And then you realize how serious it is and Mando has to take him out. In this one, you really care about him. You're like, oh, I really kind of want more IG-11.
Totally.
You know, where's the Disney Plus IG-11 series?
You're sad that he died.
Sorry, they can do IG-12. It's fine. I'll tune in for that just as easily.
And so and they go out. So now he blows up all the troopers in sight.
Of course.
They go out there and it's not over. There is a TIE fighter lurking in the sky with Moff Gideon. Giancarlo Esposito. Gus has a TIE fighter and he is flying around. And in maybe my favorite line of the episode, we get a Carl Weathers Greef Karga turning to Baby Yoda and going, do the hand thing.
Yeah, it was great.
Yo, baby, do the hand thing. Carl Weathers, Apollo Creed, said, hey, baby, do the hand thing.
That was so funny. So, yeah, I think Jenna James or someone in the chat pointed out how much they liked that line.
I laughed so hard
when
Baby Yoda just waves back. He's like, huh?
They're like, oh, hi.
Like, what?
Just
incredible. Hi, Carl Weathers.
But and we did skip over this, but before they left the armor, before the sacrifice, he hands him a jetpack and says, when you're ready, you'll be able to use this. Who knew it was going to be five minutes later?
I was like, all right, so season two, he's going to get his jetpack.
We got jetpack.
And I was like, oh, no, he needs it now. And how awesome was it that he could finally fly?
Oh, my gosh. And he flies onto... This is the... Guys, this is the coolest thing I've seen on TV, maybe all year. I think...
Agreed.
Him jetpacking onto a TIE fighter, using all of his gadgets, attaching on there, putting the grenade on there... Just so metal.
He's like freaking Batman.
How long have you wanted to see something like that?
He's the Star Wars Batman.
Oh,
it's so incredible. Yeah. He's the Batman of the Star Wars galaxy.
Agreed.
It's so amazing. It was, and again, they did such a great job of making, just making it look so realistic, even though it's one of those unreal things where, there's no way that could happen. But you're like, no, I believe that that happened.
Yeah.
Look, we don't usually see TIE fighters on a planet. So usually they're in space. So the only kind of way that you're fighting with TIE fighters is shooting at them. And the fact that he was there and he was, he was like hanging onto it, trying to shoot him through the glass and just putting the charge on it. It was such a great sequence, and this is it's a perfect example of why you can't cheap out on these Disney Plus series.
Yeah.
Like, if they had tried to cut any quarters, by the way.
We're having a hard time with
words. If they were trying to cut any quarters, any credits, if they were trying to cut corners on that sequence, you'd been like, oh, man, that could have been cool.
Yeah.
And you'd be like, oh, maybe it'll look cool in a comic book adaptation. But they did such a good job, and it was great. It was like everything you wanted from Star Wars, really,
it is everything you want. And we're just gonna take one quick moment sidebar to say thank y'all so much for being in the chats. Thank you so much for watching. Please give us a thumbs up on YouTube. It helps our show a lot. We're gonna be back for season two, of course, and please go on iTunes, give us a 5-star review, Spotify, like us, share us, comment. Thank you so much for making us the ESPN of TV talk. Just wrapping up the episode now, takes out the TIE fighter, crash lands, and then he meets up in a, for as great an episode as this was, bit of an oddly shot scene where they're all just kind of standing there, and Carl Weathers has his arms. I think this is his go-to stance where he's just a Superman pose. Well, good job, Mando. You did it. So, like, it's very straightforward. And they put Baby Yoda down and he walks over to him and it looks like he flies away. And the shot of him flying away with Baby Yoda on his shoulder parallels that shot of when the Mandalorian saved him on his home planet after his parents were killed.
Yeah.
Same exact framing and everything. Full circle. Cannot wait for season two. No. But that wasn't the end of this episode.
No, it wasn't.
Because we go to that crash landing site.
Oh, my God. Which, by the way... Right before that happened, when I was watching the episode for the first time, I was like, why wouldn't you go make sure he's dead?
Oh, yeah.
It was pretty far.
No, I know. I know. And it makes sense for them to just get out of there. But, like,
by the way, I'm going to assume nobody in the chat, nobody here at this desk, nobody was surprised that he was still alive. Because the way that he crashed and we didn't see it, we didn't see him explode, I'm like, all right. So we're going to see him.
He's probably not dead.
I didn't think that we were going to see him at the end of this episode. I figured that that was like a season two thing. But
I think that, honestly, I like that they showed him at the very end.
I much prefer that they did.
Set up season two where you kind of know what you're going to get. And he is
let's just say Darksaber.
Yes!
Darksaber. Yeah. Yes. He carves himself out of the ship. He didn't just open the door. He carved himself out.
And by the way,
even if
he just had like a regular lightsaber that maybe he killed a Jedi, that still was really interesting.
Huge.
You know? I was just like, all right, this is cool. And then like, oh, wow, it's the Darksaber.
It's the Mandalorian saber. So, and as we were talking about earlier, with the original Mandalorian who was Force sensitive, his lightsaber was the Darksaber. So this is a weapon that has been around for thousands of years, and it is essentially the weapon that the leader of Mandalore, the person in charge of Mandalore and the people, wield. And we hadn't seen it the entire show, and it does come up in these other Star Wars shows with Clone Wars and Rebels, so you can learn a lot more about them there. But wow, he has the Darksaber, and just, you know, this isn't a spoiler for the series, but where we last saw this Darksaber in canon, the Mandalorians had it. So something has happened.
That was in Rebels, which is right before A New Hope.
It's before A New Hope. It's in that time period between Sith and A New Hope.
We'll do our social at the end, but Ryan, I know you tweeted out some very helpful episodes that people should watch to, you know, like, obviously you're saying watch these shows, but if you only have time to pick and choose a few and you want to learn about the Darksaber, follow Ryan on Twitter.
These are there's some episodes where you can watch for the Darksaber, but so fascinating because now it just means, wow, Moff Gideon is so tied to the Mandalorian people that he has the saber. For all we know, during that great purge, the Imperials are in charge of that planet, and maybe he's even the head of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
So let's get into just real quick. We're going to go into our director's corner. This is a special segment where we highlight the director of each and every episode and what they're doing, what they have done, and what they will do this week. It is Taika Waititi, who also was the voice of IG-11. Big shout out for him. He absolutely crushed this episode. I think this was one of the best episodes of the entire season. Full circle everything. Taika Waititi, incredible director. He's from the Flight of the Conchords, from New Zealand, big comedy background, and he's directed an abundance of films, most notably this year, Jojo Rabbit, which will probably be one of the front runners for Best Picture. But let's see, he's done What We Do in the Shadows, a great mockumentary with vampires in New Zealand. Another one called Hunt for the Wilder People, another amazing tale with a young child actor. This year, Jojo Rabbit. He's also done Thor Ragnarok.
Right, he's on an incredible run, you know, just with Thor Ragnarok. And also voicing characters in Avengers movies.
You know? It feels like everything that he touches is good.
Yeah. It's gold.
Like, there's some directors where they've made some amazing movies. And look, it might happen eventually, obviously. And then they've made some really bad movies. He hasn't made anything bad yet.
George Lucas!
And as the Marvel movie news duo over here, I mean, Thor Ragnarok was a revelation.
Oh, it was fantastic.
Saved the character in a way.
4 times.
Yeah, I think, it redefined who Thor was in the subsequent Avengers movies.
It made him so much. And look, I liked even Dark World. People laugh at me all the time for that, but I enjoyed it a lot more. See? A lot more than... That's perfect timing.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it a lot more than most people did, but he really made the Thor character more likable with that movie.
Absolutely did.
And relatable.
We cannot wait to see what he does next. I would love for him to get a movie or to even get another Star Wars spinoff show because I think he fits so well into this universe. The thing he has on the horizon is Thor Love and Thunder, obviously Thor 4, and this show Time Bandits.
I like the sound of that.
I wouldn't like the sound of it unless he was involved in it. So shout out to Taika Waititi. Let's get into our news, Zia.
For the news this week.
Yes.
Gotta wait for the cool music.
Yeah.
So that battle scene in the beginning where IG-11 comes and shoots and they go out and start fighting with the stormtroopers and Moff Gideon comes in, that was an intense scene to watch.
Yes.
It was also a very intense scene to film because Gina Carano tweeted out. Cara Dune, yeah. And this is Cara Dune. Yes. She tweeted out, and this is, you know, her exact tweet. I'm going to read it word for word. "I'm going to tell you something just between us. I legitimately passed out twice while shooting that scene. So, yeah, it was pretty great. That little one's force choke is no joke."
Whoa.
So she passed out twice while filming that. I would imagine some of the practical effects are, like, maybe the fire. Maybe some of that was there and it was really hot.
And I can just imagine physically how brutal it is. Don't forget that we've never seen anybody do this before. She pounded away at a stormtrooper helmet so that we saw his eyes. You've never seen a stormtrooper get eaten like that. Which was fantastic.
Yes.
Yeah. So I can imagine that she passed out twice.
So, I mean, just way more power to her for this.
Yeah, power to her. Amazing. It makes me a little concerned, though, twice. I don't know. I think you got to have someone on set really monitoring what's going on.
After the first time.
Was she overexerting herself? What were the conditions? So I want a few more details.
She also is an MMA, has an MMA background. She was a fighter before that. And I have to oh my gosh, those guys have to, when they're cutting weight, I can imagine how many times they pass out. Because they're also, you're at a calorie deficit and you're at a liquid deficit because you're literally trying to cut weight, but you're also training while you're doing it. Yeah. It's intense.
I think it makes me a little concerned if the conditions are fully there, or maybe if she just, you know, maybe needs to explain or maybe say if she needs some help or needs some water or anything. Look, I always get concerned when people are passing out on set.
They could very well have filmed that over like 2 days.
Also
I mean?
True.
You have to think about it. It was a lot of time. But I agree, and I think that it's something that they'll definitely pay attention to. I don't know where they filmed this, but it didn't look like it was cold. You know, so I can imagine that was a factor, too. I just want to get in a couple comments from the chat. Much earlier in the chat, Jenna James pointed out how much she liked seeing Carl Weathers' Apollo Creed speaking about the creed of the Mandalorians. That's probably my favorite comment from the chat.
Very nice. Love it, Jenna.
You're going to like this one. Frofa in the chat. "The Darksaber is destined to be Baby Yoda's one day." Imagine.
Don't even.
He's a foundling.
Don't even.
He's a foundling.
Oh, my God.
And our friend Ivan Soto says that he hopes that Moff Gideon did not kill Bo-Katan or Sabine, who is, of course, one of the main characters from Rebels.
Oh, my gosh.
But if he did oversee that purge, there's always a chance. So,
yikes.
Yes. Yeah. So, and look, we've had a great chat for this episode, but we've had so much to talk about. I really have not been able to get a lot of your comments in, and I apologize for that. But if you're watching the archive version and you comment, we will all swing by in the chat and make sure to continue the conversation with all of you.
Absolutely. And we are running very low on time, but let's do some predictions for. Well, we got Mandalorian season two, as well as we do have another Star Wars series, additional season of Clone Wars, season 7, coming in February.
I'm so excited.
Which, again, with all the new Darksaber revelations, I am assuming we are going to have some more details on that in the new season. What are your predictions moving forward, Christian?
Well, I think also probably there are going to be people that missed season 6 of Clone Wars because it didn't air on Cartoon Network unless
it was Netflix.
It just went right to Netflix.
Right to Netflix.
So, and look, yeah, most people have Netflix, but you just didn't necessarily know it even happened. So, but I believe it's all on Disney Plus now.
That's a fair point.
So, you have time to catch up. I'm really looking forward to it. I did not see the last couple seasons of Clone Wars, not for any reason that I didn't enjoy it. So, I'm hoping to catch up on all of it and just sort of fill in some gaps. Mm-hmm. But I think it's great that they're going to have more Star Wars content. I mean, we haven't even talked about there's the Cassian Andor show, there's the Ben Kenobi show.
Yeah.
You know, and we don't know the timeline for those, but we're going to get all of those, you know, mixed in with the Marvel shows. So, to your question earlier, you got to keep Disney Plus. What are you getting rid of it for? Now, that's why they gave me, people like me, a discount, and we prepaid for 3 years.
Which was smart.
Which got, the third year was basically free.
Right.
So, I can't go anywhere. But, I understand people like, oh, Mando's over, but you're probably going to need to get it back pretty soon. You know, maybe you can go a few weeks or months, but I feel like you're going to need to see all this. And I can't wait to see how they tie it all in, you know, the animated versus the live action.
See ya.
I just love that they're all canon, too. That's so great. I'm the same. I've got to catch up on everything. Now that it's all on Disney Plus, that's amazing because it's such a great – you have everything there. You can start from the beginning and go to the end. As for predictions, I definitely think that we're going to find out that there's more of a personal history with Moff Gideon and Din Djarin and the Mandalorian. So I hope, I think that there's going to be something there, because I feel like maybe he ordered the attack that killed his family, something like that.
Yeah.
And it's going to make it more personal, even though he's after Baby Yoda, and that's already personal enough as it is.
Right. Predictions for me real quick. I definitely am more convinced than ever that we are just going to get more and more ties to these other animated shows, Clone Wars and Rebels, particularly Rebels for me. I think Star Wars Rebels is a vastly underrated show. No one, barely anyone has really watched it. It has some of the best Star Wars stories in it ever. I'm talking including the movies. There's just some incredible content in there. And Dave Filoni's involvement in this was major. You know he was in the conversation to include that Darksaber in this final episode. You know he was there the entire time. And I really am convinced that Ahsoka Tano from Star Wars Clone Wars and Rebels will appear in Mandalorian Season 2 live action.
What about Sabine?
Sabine, Christian raised a good question.
Let me get a new comment from the chat. Algernon Radish, whose name I always appreciate. The mystery character at the end of Chapter 5 is either Bo-Katan or Sabine coming from Moff Gideon. That's their prediction. Mm. So I think a lot of people are thinking about it. And then the other thing I'll throw in is your point about Rebels. Unlike Clone Wars, it was done when Star Wars was under the Disney umbrella. Clone Wars started, when it was just separate, Lucasfilm for Cartoon Network.
Yeah.
So I think it's able to be a part of the bigger picture and the bigger plans. I think that a lot of that stuff was done with connecting the universes and the synergy in mind for Rebels.
And it's all coming full circle. I really do think that this next season of Clone Wars is going to be big, and it might be so good that they're going to intrigue people to really go back. But wow, it's the golden age of television. Star Wars is here to stay. This was such an incredible series, an incredible season. I love doing it with y'all. Shout out to Steph Zabral, who could not be here. We're going to start to wrap. Christian Blatt, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at ChristianDMZ, and you can find Zia and myself Thursdays over on the Popcorn Talk Network at 1 p.m. Pacific. For Marvel movie news, we'll be back next Thursday, January 9th, and every Thursday at 1 Pacific from there on forward.
Z Anderson.
And you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Zia_Land. That's spelled XIA_Land. And you can find Christian and myself every weekday. This is again starting next week. We have Marvel News Daily.
Daily.
Also over on the Popcorn Talk. Tidbits of news every day.
Love it. Love it. And you can find me at Ryan Nilsen, NILSEN on Twitter, and Ryan Nilsen on Instagram. You can also find Steph Zabral at Steph Zabral Steez on Twitter. Thank you so much for being here in the chat. Give us
don't forget
ratings.
Both of you
Star Wars news. Yes. Every Thursday.
I mean, if you're fans
thank
of this
you.
Show, you should you can continue to see Ryan and Steph. Maybe they'll occasionally let Zia and I visit.
But, I think so. We'll have some great guests. But until next time, thank you so much for the Mandalorian After Show.
This is the way.
Our founder Kevin Undergaro and me, Maria Menounos, would like to thank you for tuning in to AfterBuzz TV. Remember, we're not just the first, we're the biggest in the world, and we're the only destination for all your favorite TV shows. Whatever you crave, we've got it. So go to AfterBuzzTV.com and check out our lineup. Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principal.